Welcome to Education Talks. I'm David Burke. Ryan Foy is Lead Programs and Resources at Physical and Health Education Canada. He's also the founder of Foy Consulting. He's a two-time Amazon best-selling author and has recently published Listen, How to Be You in a World Where You Can Be Anything. Ryan is also a professional speaker and through his consultancy provides book coaching, wellness coaching, and social media consulting services to individuals and small businesses. Well, Ryan Foy, welcome to Education Talks. Great to have you.
Yeah, thanks, David. And for everyone listening in here today, welcome. This is going to be a fun conversation. I'm looking forward to it.
I've been looking forward to this for quite a while, actually, and just got started on your new book, which we'll talk a little bit about soon. But I wanted to start off with if you could perhaps just sort of share with the audience a little bit about yourself, your background, and your pathway into education, and what inspired you to pursue that path.
Yeah, absolutely, David. So I'm chiming in here today from a place called Prince Edward Island. It's a small island, the smallest province in Canada. So I'm coming to you from Canada today. Excited to be here. So a little bit about my background, how I got to here to today. I'm an educator by trade, but my passion really sits with health, physical education, and wellness education and well-being. And it was actually, we have to go back to when I was 12 years old. So when I was 12 years old, I was actually diagnosed with chronic migraines. And I didn't really know why I was getting these migraines and no one could really figure it out. No medicine was really working. And so I was lucky enough to be part of a study through a local university. And long story short, basically you had to journal your day to day. And so you journal what you ate, you know, what you did for physical activity and how your sleep was. And I ended up coming out of that study realizing that the days that I was physically active, I was less likely, if at all, getting these migraine headaches. And I also slept better and I ate better. And so most of us don't figure this out until we're adults. So if you picture your 12-year-old self and me at 12 years old, that was a foundational moment for me to realize that, hey, if I move every day, I'm going to feel good and I'm going to avoid these headaches and I'm going to avoid pain. And so that really, that moment, that year has sent me on this trajectory in pursuit of well-being and pursuit of wellness. And I've been able to make a career out of that. So I've been very fortunate in education to, you know, be able to teach health and physical education, work nationally to support health and physical education. And, you know, well-being has morphed into my writing, my books, my speaking and all of that. So, like I say, it was a moment in time where it was lemons and you kind of make lemonade out of the situation. And who knows where my career will continue to go and what I'll continue to do. But I just know that at the center of all that is really well-being and that pursuit of balance and just being well. And I think that it's just a journey that we're all on. And for me, it's unique in that sense.
Indeed. Now, you know, with such a varied career spanning wellness education, also mentioned in the intro, book coaching, public speaking, could you share sort of what motivated you to explore these areas and how do they interconnect in your professional life?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll start with education because, you know, education for me was definitely a calling. And, you know, one thing as I was growing up as a teenager, playing a lot of sports, really loving physical education, I knew that I really wanted to do that. I really loved being in the gymnasium. And so education for me was that. It was, you know, giving back to the community that invested in me, providing quality physical education and health education opportunities for other students. And, you know, when you look at upstream prevention in a public health sense, the highest form of that is really education and really health education, wellness education. And so, yeah, it was more of a calling in that sense. You know, the book coaching really stemmed out of my journey as an author along the way. And, you know, if we kind of picture these two paths running in parallel, when I was publishing books, I was also teaching. And what I realized is I was making a lot of mistakes as an author. And I'm a self-published author. And I was like, you know, there was no one really in my immediate circle for my first couple of books that were published authors. And so these mistakes I was kind of making on my own, and being an educator, I reflected back on that and I thought, well, wouldn't it be great to develop something, some sort of a coaching program that would help other folks out there that don't really know where to start, but have a story to tell. And so that really ignited the book coaching program that I offer, just to help other authors out there. You know, I've worked with educators who are, you know, trying to get their books published, folks who work around education as well, trying to get the books published independently, and just helping them do it with more efficiency and less headache is always good. So that was more of a filling a market need, and trying to help others. I would say that on the speaking front, you know, that's definitely been kind of a part of all of who I am always. I feel like you and I, David, could talk for hours on here. Just the other week, I actually did a fireside chat at a local pub here in Prince Edward Island, launching my book. And I made a joke that I could literally sit here all afternoon in front of the fire and talk. So I just love that. I'm an extrovert, and I love being able to get on the mic or get in the room and just have conversation. And so those things have kind of all converged together. You know, if any of my books, really, all of them have this thread of well-being and personal growth and development through them. And same with my speaking, it comes out in all of the topics. And of course, in my day-to-day work, working nationally to support healthy schools and well-being in schools, that's really just aligned with who I am and what I stand for. So yeah, it's just kind of an interesting world. It's really cool to have these opportunities. And again, just to align my passion, my profession, is something I'm really grateful for sure.
I was wondering if you could maybe just share a few of the sort of key challenges that you've encountered in this work.
Yeah. So if I focus in on the education system in Canada just for a moment, and that's the system that I'm primarily familiar with, there are some challenges for sure. You know, I just got back from working in Western Canada. You know, and the challenges across our country here in Canada and even in North America are very interesting. And one of them here in Canada that I find interesting is that education here is provincial. So even though we have, you know, federal mandates and federal decisions, the decisions that govern education, or at least public education here in Canada, are provincial. And so what you end up having is, you know, a lot of disconnect. Right. So what's happening in one area of the country may be a wise practice, or maybe great policies, or even great curriculum. But then, you know, you flip over to the province beside that, and it may not be the same. Mm. And the other thing that it creates is it creates more space for education to become political. And we're starting to see that more and more and more, where you have that polarization of, you know, you're over here or you're over here, and that permeates into education policies, decisions around education, funding, all of that. And so that's definitely a challenge. You know, we've had teachers reach out to the organization I work for and say, hey, will you folks just be our federal body for health and physical education? We're not. We're a nonprofit organization just outside of the government. But that was just a very interesting observation to hear that from teachers. So I'd say that's number one. I would say another challenge too, David, is just in North America in general, is our education system, you know, is inherently very colonial. And I think we're starting to learn more about that, at least here in Canada, about how our systems are set up to, you know, potentially favor a certain group of individuals, and other individuals often feel left out of that structure and that model. And we're continuing to learn what components of that do we maybe disrupt or dismantle so that all students are on an equal playing field in public education. Not an easy thing to do, especially, you know, looking at different countries around the world and where they're at. But here in Canada, especially, you know, we're such a large country, we're such a diverse country, that it makes for a lot of challenges there too, to figure out how to dismantle that and how to recreate it. So that'd be another one. And then the final thing I'll share too is that, you know, competing priorities in schools. You know, David, you've worked in schools, I've worked in schools, most of our listeners work in schools, and there's so many priorities coming down, right? We look at, you know, STEM education, while it's important, you know, oftentimes wellness education or physical and health education are not always, you know, thought about at the same level or treated at the same level. And so, you know, we're constantly advocating for that. We're constantly advocating that well-being is foundational for learning. And how do you achieve that? Well, you need quality physical education. You need quality health education. You need healthy school communities to make that happen. So I would say that's definitely a third challenge that I'm seeing for sure.
You just mentioned, you know, the importance of public education and sort of the colonial mindset of our education system. It's very similar to, I think, Australia. It's my experience working in public system in New South Wales. And it is just interesting looking at the news recently where there's been a lot of fanfare around Singapore's outstanding results in the PISA rankings for 2022. And Australia managed to get into the top 10, but the focus is, oh, well, let's have a look at what Singapore is doing, but missing perhaps the most crucial point, which is that Singapore has a very, very strong public education system. And that is probably the biggest contributor to having such a positive impact on the entire country, which is something which I know that in Australia, they're perhaps not always as keen to focus in on the importance of public education, sort of seeing it more as a trying to appease a sort of dual system. But that's my soapbox. Let's talk about the book. Yes, as I say, it's perfect for me because I think I was just reading a part that I really liked where you talk about the importance of imagining your perfect day. So if you're someone who's working remotely, you're like me, I'm a digital nomad these days, this was quite interesting. Now, the book title I should mention as well, Listen, How to Be You in a World Where You Can Be Anything. Now, this is quite a fascinating topic. So perhaps you can just sort of share some of the core message of the book and also what inspired you to write it.
Yeah, that's great, David. And I know exactly what you're talking about too when you're talking about the perfect days. It's just a very interesting way to look at it. You know, just for folks listening in, basically it's actually breaking down how you can recreate the perfect day. And, you know, if you do that over a certain amount of time, imagine a life of X amount of days that are actually perfect days. Like, you know, that's actually not a bad goal to strive for. Anyway, there's more in the book that explains that concept, but it was just a different way of looking at it. The first thing, I guess, where I'll start is the inspiration for the book. So I actually started writing it and I didn't know what the title was going to be. I tend to do that with my books. But I knew I was onto something. I knew that, you know, there coming out of COVID, there's just a lot happening. And, you know, we're learning a lot about the amount of information that's coming at us is not always valid. We're learning that, you know, the fringe hours of our lives are being shrunken down. You know, we're over consuming things like Netflix, different applications on our phone, streaming, whatever the thing is. And those margins in our lives that are typically in the past saved for taking time to reflect, taking time to think about who we are, taking time to think about what we want to do, thinking about how do we navigate change in our career, in our relationships, in our lives, they're shrinking and it's concerning. And in the book too, I talk about the opportunities that are ahead of us if we are aligned with our values and we know who we are and where we're going and who we're becoming. And so long story short, I was in the writing process of this book and I heard a quote and I forget who said the quote, but it went something like this. It went something like, in a world where you can be anything, the most challenging thing people in society will face will be deciding what to do and who to be. And we're seeing that in decision overload. You go into schools now, I spend a lot of time in schools and you ask, you know, high schoolers, middle schoolers, what do you want to do? Or who do you, you know, what are you interested in? And a lot of times, you know, students have a hard time actually telling you what they're interested in. But they will tell you that they want to be a YouTube star or they want to be a gamer. And those are fine. But what's going to happen to noble professions like education, like nursing, healthcare? And so in a world where there's constant change and there's constantly new opportunities in front of us, which is great, how do we get back to who we are? And how do we know who we are as we navigate where we want to go and who we want to become? So that's just a little bit of a high level concept of what the book is about. But one core message I'll say that really pops out to me is just reiterating that it's important to take some space in your life to reflect on who, you know, where you're going and who you're becoming. And, you know, I really look at the book as kind of a personal manual to keep you focused along the way and, you know, figuring out what is your true north. And, you know, I look at a generation ago, and I talk about this in the book too, you know, many people didn't change jobs as much as we're changing jobs now. And the opportunities are really endless out there right now, at least here in Canada and North America in the next few years. And so, you know, navigating that without losing your true north is really what it's about. So it's small, it's compact, it's practical, it's a little bold in some cases, but it's good to have it out there for sure.
Now, how do you see remote work perhaps impacting the education sector and the wellness sector?
Yeah, I would say on that, you know, first I will say remote work is here to stay. There was this push and pull during the pandemic. Is this going to stay? Is this going to go? And you had CEOs coming out, at least in the US, saying, no, we need to get everybody back in the office. And there's merit behind that. I understand that. But when you look at the actual research too, it's not all one-sided. It's pretty much down the middle in terms of, you know, what works for the employee, what works for the individuals, and what works for productivity for the company. And we're still starting to see that research and that push and pull still happening a little bit, but I honestly think it's here to stay. I think we're moving increasingly more remote. I think healthcare is moving that direction here in Canada. My wife works in healthcare, and we're continuing to see that that's a more equitable way to reach people, especially with primary care and secondary care. You know, and if you look at the wellness space and kind of personal training, things like that, those services are continuing to go increasingly remote. And I mean, I've even been thinking about this, David. Here's a thought for your listeners is if anybody's been to Disney, you know that hologram technology exists. Like you go into Disney and they've recreated Captain Jack Sparrow from Pirates of the Caribbean. And it's like, he's there, he's real. It's a hologram. Imagine when that technology gets affordable enough where you and I could be sitting in the back of my home office here as holograms, or you're in my office as a hologram and we're having this conversation. Like that is not that unrealistic to think about. And, you know, we're moving at such a pace with our technology that might be something that can happen. And I think, you know, there's the utopian side of it and there's the dystopian side of it. And, you know, the other thing that I find interesting too is that, you know, we're social beings by nature as well. And so even though we're increasingly becoming remote in education, healthcare, and in the wellness industry, you know, that same technology that's making us move more remote can actually also give us space to connect. Like, you know, taking opportunities like this to connect, taking opportunities to find your local community groups using social media and technology to gather in your own community. I think there's going to be new ways to explore that. And I think it's important that we don't lose sight that we need to stay social. I mean, loneliness is an epidemic on its own right now, and we need to be very cautious of that. So even though remote work is great and it's where things are going in a lot of industries, I think it's just really, really important that we don't confuse communication and connection, and that we focus on making sure we're still getting the connection that we need to fill ourselves and to not, you know, not be lonely. So that's just something that I've noticed as well.
Now you've experienced leading First Nations communities and national mental health campaigns. What have been some of your key learnings and perhaps the most rewarding experiences there?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. I would say a few learnings. First and foremost, there are teachers in the corners of the world working so hard that never make the news. You know, they're never up for awards. You know, they're very humble. and they are heroes. And I've seen this time and time again. I was reminded of this last week. I was in a rural northern community in Canada in December. And I mean, there was no cell service in this community. And came into the community and just the teachers were so warm. The school was so warm. The administration was great. The teachers all stayed for an optional professional development at the end of the school day. They were engaged. They were the most vocal group of teachers I think I've ever worked with around the topic that we were talking about. And, you know, the next day they were all asking how are things going with the students? They were in and out of the room. They were involved. And, you know, you just see it and you see that, you know, these teachers are giving everything they got. And there's a lot of challenges working in some of these communities. You know, you're commuting an hour and a half a day. You know, you're out of cell range if you're trying to plan for family and you got things going on in your personal life. It's all got to wait. You know, oftentimes you don't have the best technology in these schools. Attendance is hit or miss, but these teachers are showing up day in and day out, year over year. And I'll tell you another story too. I was working in a northern community in Alberta, Canada, Western Canada a few years ago. And I remember driving. Well, first of all, I had to get instructions how to get to the school because I didn't know. Google Maps doesn't work in some parts of Canada. And so the teacher emailed me the night before and said, you know, basically drive up this road and then take a left at the garbage bin. And there's a sign there and go straight for like 10 kilometers and it's on your right. So I literally did that and I showed up at the school. And so I was like, okay, you know, I had this activity plan. I was doing some mentorship with this teacher. And I was like, okay, we're going to do some land-based learning today and we're going to infuse some, you know, physical activity in here. And so we had this plan. He loved the plan. All of a sudden, you know, they're playing Go Canada on the speaker, getting ready to start the day. And then they come over the PA system and they're like, so we're now on a wolf watch. There was a wolf in the school, or not in the school, but like on the school grounds circling the school. And so all the students obviously had to stay in, and on the fly we had to adjust. And so the teacher's like, yeah, no problem. We can adjust and we'll, you know, we'll do this and do this and do this. And it was just so calm about it. Like, here I am like a guest in this community freaking out. Like we're surrounded by, is it a pack of wolves? Like, what's going on here? And this was just so relaxed for this educator to deal with this. And so this is just one of many stories, but again, I just go back to there's heroes working in these communities all over the world, and especially in Northern Canada. And we don't celebrate them enough. And they're probably too humble. You know, they're not jumping on podcasts and talking about their experiences, but they're out there. And kudos to you if you're one of those heroes, because I just applaud the work you do. I would say another learning real quick too is, you know, schools and educators and students, it's about relationships before resources. And sometimes we, you know, we create the latest and greatest shiny resource, but buy-in happens when you have a relationship. And it sounds so simple, but we often forget that. And I think that's just another learning that I'm continually reminded of, that, you know, we need to build a relationship first and then bring resources in after that, and listen to the needs of that specific community in that specific area. So I would say that's another one. And then in terms of the rewards of working in these communities and the work that I've done, I would say, you know, definitely creating new opportunities, working with these communities, building relationships with these communities that are long lasting, still, you know, connecting back with these educators years later is really, really cool. And I would say too, like, being able to go in and listen to stories in these communities that are told, you know, what are the realities in some of these communities, so that it better informs how we create what we create nationally. I think that's been a huge reward as well along the way. And just to be with the students, they're just so great. I could go on, but I had some funny moments with the students last week and they were just awesome. And, you know, showing me pictures of their snowmobiles and all that, but it's definitely super rewarding work and lots of learnings along the way.
Now that is fantastic. And I've just got to just mention, as an Australian, a lot of people always say to me, they're afraid to come to Australia because of snakes and spiders. But hearing that story about wolf circling the school. That's terrifying. I mean, you've got that. You've got bears. Oh, it's just that's too much for me. I mean, if there's a snake in the playground, that's okay. The kids come and tell you. You call someone in. Just stay away from the garden or wherever it was. But that's something else. What you experience? Looking towards the future, what new projects or initiatives are you excited about, and how do you plan to continue impacting the fields of wellness, education, and personal growth?
Yeah, I would say on the education front, I'm definitely working on some fun new projects for educators. I'm working on building out a new activity center for health educators and folks teaching physical education or wellness education. There'll be over 1,000 different activities on that in 2024, and it will be free and open access. So I'm pretty excited to be also building those activities and building that database. So I'll definitely circle back and share that with you, David, when it's ready. There's a new innovative project that I'm leading across Canada right now on reducing youth vaping. And I'm not sure exactly where vaping is at among youth globally, but in Canada, it's a real epidemic. And so we have lots of learning, lots of research coming out of that innovative project. And so we're looking at scaling that, doing more knowledge mobilization around that, and just continuing to work with youth to figure out, you know, what's going to work for them to support reducing that behavior in the school community. So really excited about that. I'm going to be presenting at a lot of teacher conferences in Eastern Canada and then in Western Canada. You can check it out on the Ed Events website. We are hosting a national conference in 2024 in Saskatoon, Canada. So you can definitely go there and check that out. And excited to build some more courses. You know, I feel like it's just a never ending journey as an educator and entrepreneur. You're always thinking about, oh, this is a great idea. And then, you know, I talked to the folks over at EduSpark as an example, and they're like, yeah, build it. And so I was like, oh, shoot. Okay, now I got to do this. And, you know, I have too many ideas and not enough time. But I'm really excited for 2024. I think it's going to be really exciting to see where the book goes, see where what I end up creating for courses, and just being my creative self in the education and wellness and personal growth spaces is what I want to continue to do. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, we'll include in the description the links to all of those things, the book, your website, the conference, any EduSpark courses. So it's all there. So if you're listening or watching on YouTube, make sure you have a look at those links. And, we're right out of time. But, Ryan, I've got to say it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on Education Talks. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you, David. And for all the listeners tuning in, thanks for spending your time with us. Hope it was good. And let's keep the conversation going.
The Ed Events community is your one-stop shop for all things happening in international education. We're partnering with events organizers, solutions providers, and schools so that you can discover professional opportunities by joining for free. You can also connect with colleagues in various community groups. So sign up today by visiting the Ed Events website, ed.events.